Now, one of the things that so Lego, as you know, did this and does this quite effectively. I love their phrase of there's only two groups of honest people in the world, kids and drunks. You know, kids
yes,
will never lie about whether
that,
a toy's fun or not.
I love that.
You know, one of the things that they did is they watched, one of the things that they've been accused of is that Lego didn't appeal to girls. It was a boy's toy. And so they did a lot of work, and they experimented with different shapes and colors and themes and stories, and they came up with a Lego Friends line. And it did tremendously well, but it was pretty controversial in the U.S. because of its pink and lavender colors and its themes of there. I think there was a cafe and there was a beauty parlor, as well as an inventor's workshop mm-hmm. and a veterinarian and so forth. They kind of do what we say designers, they did what we say good designers should do, and they came up with a product. But there was something missing kind of socially. What advice are you going to give to your students about that? Or what advice would you have given to Lego?
Well, this is a really thorny subject, right? And it's in a way a chicken and egg kind of thing when it comes to gender, because we have preconceived notions of gender, and then are we perpetuating them by having the toys play into that? And you know, and at the same time, if the kids are wanting that, and then we also have parents who are the purchasers, right? So we're dealing with the parents' preconceived notions and. But when it comes to gender, I mean, I really think it's best to be, you know, there is a philosophy of universal design that many designers subscribe to that says if you can design something that fits the needs of the niche or the smaller population that hasn't been served well, that there's the potential for that to serve the larger population better. So, you know, the advice would be to look for improvements that are not necessarily girl specific, but that appeal to girls and could appeal to all kids. I mean, it's tricky, but that would be the ideal.
Yeah, I told this story to my listeners before. I did a maker camp for my daughter and her friends, mm-hmm. and I had done pretty much a similar camp for my son and his friends 2 years before. And so I did it for both groups when they're about 14 years old, and I taught them how to make stuff. The whole idea being, you know, technology inspires design. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that in terms of learning about vacuum forming and 3D CAD and 3D printing and milling and all those other technologies, there was no real difference. The groups produced equally good stuff. I think the girls were probably a little bit better because mm-hmm. I think 14-year-old girls are probably a little bit more mature than 14-year-old boys. Mm-hmm. But what I was struck by was when the camp was over, how much different their play was. The boys would want to get big guns and shoot zombies,
right.
Where the girls would like turn on Ariana Grande yeah. and take selfies and sing right. and dance. And I just thought that was fine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they played differently didn't mean that they were any different in terms of the quality of the work or their ability to pick up some of these
right.
really technical design issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you found that same thing as you looked at the way kids play and
yeah,
kids learn.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I've been quite involved with my alma mater. I grew up in New York City, and I went to a school called the Marymount School, which is a school exclusively for girls. And they are one of the first schools to have put in a makerspace. They established it about four years ago or so. And, you know, I've just been amazed by how the girls have taken to it, and they're becoming young, you know, engineers and designers just intuitively without even thinking about it. You know, they just really want to create and want to think about how things are taken apart the way I did when I was a kid.